Blog Talk Radio. Hello, everybody. This is Whirl with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. And I'm in New Orleans. Yes, way down yonder in New Orleans. Yeah, not in New York City. And here it's like 9:30. I had to get like used to the fact that that there was a time change. I mean, it wasn't too bad, but I couldn't understand why when I got to Atlanta at and left at 9:30 a.m. and then got into New Orleans at 9:40. You know, then I go, oh, there must be some time change. So, so while I was in New Orleans, did a lot of stuff and mainly kind of like walked around and ate. What else? Or as we say in Yiddish, manishtana. Why should this night be different from all other nights? Yes, I ate. I ate my way through New Orleans. I had lunch. I had beignet. And I just came back from having dinner. Lunch. Now, I should have gotten the menu. The guy, what happened, his name is Daniel, and he owns a restaurant called Amelie's, Cafe Amelie. And it's on Royal Street. First of all, this place is like gorgeous, like a huge courtyard that's like so lush, you know, with all kinds of plants and things. You know, it's a great place for people to have a wedding, that kind of a place. Eventually, I'll have him on the radio show, and then we'll talk more about it. Talk. Well, let's say I'm from New York. Talk. Yeah, we'll talk more about it. And but one of the things I had, I just, like, it was too early. It was, all right, it was noonish, but it was, like, too early to have a drink, and I had this wonderful combination, I guess, sort of it wasn't a smoothie. Actually, it was a lemonade. They make their own lemonade, but it was a lemonade with, I know there were blueberries and some other fruit, you know, so it was really good. And I was walking around with New York Sharks owner Andra Douglas. Yes, it was really great. I was walking around with her. She's taking photos and stuff. And her friend Linda was with us, and Linda was helping us by every once in a while if we needed a photo of a whole bunch of us, you know, like, it was so cool. Look at this. Okay, I'm in my room now. I'm staying at the Chateau Bourbon, which is a Wyndham hotel, and I'm a couple of blocks from Royal, and I think I'm on maybe Iberville or something like that. But anyway, and oh, this room is wonderful. It's so big. It's like, I would describe it's like a mini suite, but instead of like having, it doesn't have a like second room, like in other words, like divided as a second room. It basically, there's a area that becomes a second room that has, you know, a couch and a table and a TV, and the door here goes right on to on the second floor of the terrace, so I can like walk out into the evening, I guess, later and see the stars at night. I'm not sure. I don't think it's cloudy. I'm so busy. I didn't go to sleep last night. I was just too excited about this trip, because what I'm doing is tomorrow I'm going off on a cruise to the Western Caribbean. Yes, I'm going to do weird things, I think. Maybe. I'm saying so at this point, you know, but I don't know. But, and, well, that's really, like, why I'm here. But before I continue, well, you know what I got to do now. And then I'll do the commercial first, and then I'll tell you some information. Yes, here we are.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale.
Ah, yes. And you can get brownies on brownies.com. Oh, man. Okay, so, you know, twist my arm, and I get an email from them. And there's these brownies they want me to try, you know, like I'm not. Wow. So these brownies arrive. Now, the ones I'm trying, like, you know, like I'm going to, okay. Well, they are truffle brownies. And when they say truffle brownies, what they do, oh, God, it's bad enough that these brownies are the best brownies in the world. They really are. They enrobe it. I mean, already the brownies have the Belgian chocolate, as I said, as you know, the commercial says. Well, now they enrobe it in the Belgian chocolate. So, and then, but this particular one, I guess they're going to put out for the Christmas season. Is that next month? Yeah, it's next month. Wait, let me ask Esther. Esther, my rubber chicken, is with me today, co-hosting. Yep, she don't talk too much. Nope, she don't talk much. But if I have questions, she'll try to remember, since she's with me all the time. She'll whisper in my ear kind of to remind me of things. So, Esther, did you have any of the brownies? Did you have any brownies? Yeah. No. Well, I didn't think so, not unless you opened the refrigerator and took them out. Okay. Yeah, it's next month, isn't it? It's the holidays. Yes. Wow. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? Wow, that's something else. But anyway, so I have a stash in my freezer of these brownies. I'll eventually get to them. I went to the chocolate show. I got a stash from that. I know. After the cruise... Well, I have to admit something. Okay. By the way, I'm waiting for Chef Michael to call in from the restaurant that I had just had dinner at. I think I have to change it on the description. I had to do this very, very quickly because I had just gotten back. By mistake, I wrote La Mirage. I knew it was something like that. It's Le Meritage, Meritage. And what does it say on here? Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Michael Farrell, he's the executive chef. And the restaurant is located in the Maison Dupuy, D-U-P-U-Y. You know, that's the only reason I like Spanish. What you see is what you pronounce. But anyway, so I'm waiting for Michael to call, and I don't know what happened. He did call. I saw the phone number, but I was like kind of waiting for me to get through the opening, and then all of a sudden I see the number gone. I don't see the number up on my switchboard. Okay, back to the New Orleans. I air trained, you know, just like I say, I jet blued. I air trained. Yeah, well, I haven't taken air train in a while. It was a real pleasure. I had decided to go. I went business class. It's like you get food. Although we did get snacks. I don't know if the peons got snacks or not. But what happens is it looks like it's kind of like first class looking in terms of like the seats are larger and there's more leg room and an opportunity to sleep. Oh, it was so good. And so that's what I did. I air trained it. Yeah, I highly recommend air train. They're so nice. They really are. There's not, well, I can't say too much about a lot of the airlines. JetBlue and AirTran happen to be my favorites. And sometimes, like, they don't go the same places, so I go kind of back and forth. I go both ways. No, never, not anymore. And so that's what I did. I air trained it. And I'll air train it back. Air train this way, air train the other way. And so we walked around. Andrew and Linda and I walked around. Basically, we were in the French Quarter. I see some places that were, that got hit by Katrina. I mean, I saw a place and nothing like that, totally broken down. Apparently, things have been built up pretty much. If you come down here, this, at least this area in the French Quarter, is not going to be as too obvious that there was a problem. It's pretty packed. There's a lot of people here. And also walked down the Royal Street. That's a great, great avenue, street. That's a great street to walk along. A lot of shops and boutiques and things like that. As a matter of fact, later on, I have an artist that's going to be calling in to talk to us, not just about her artwork, but about the area, you know, why she came here and how it is for her. And then we went to, let's see, I think it was the market area. Because there was a statue. Who was it? Esther? I saw you with over at the statue. Who was it a statue of? Yeah. It was. It was a statue of Joan of Arc. I see. So then there's that, because there's down the other side as you go farther, I guess, with the lower numbers then. Yeah. Then you come to Jackson Square. That's like the famous area. And the two things that everybody sees is the monument there for what the heck's his face, Jackson. You know, that guy on the horse there. And you see this church. That's the, or more, I guess, and I would, I don't know what the difference between a church and a cathedral, but it was cathedral-like. How's that? And so that's like, that kind of depicts New Orleans when people think of it. And we had a beignet. Beignet, I was debating what, I was trying to remember, beignet is, if anybody knows what a zeppole is, do you know what a zeppole is? Raise your hand if you know what a zeppole is. Okay. Yeah. What is it? What is it? You don't think I can hear you? I can hear you if you tell me what it is. Yeah, okay, that's what it is. So it's basically, it's like a beignet. It's a piece of dough, fried dough, that's like on the sweet side. And then it's, after it's fried, it's dipped in powdered sugar. That's what a beignet is. So we had, just a taste, we had beignet and café au lait with beignet. So that was, and it's pretty nice. It's a nice day today. I certainly needed the exercise, God, because of the food. I need the exercise now. What happened to my chef, Michael Farrell? I hope nothing happened at the restaurant. Well, and it's not like I don't think Barbara's listening. Well, I don't know. No, Barbara's not listening. And so she can't email me to say, give me the phone number and I'll call. Isn't that wonderful? She can do that. That's so cool when she can do that. Well, hopefully he will call. But all right. In the meantime, I'm going to take. I'm up for some music. I have New Orleans music, but I couldn't. I didn't get a chance to upload it. Since I'm not home. Oh, come on. I keep getting this, you know, these pop-up crap that comes up on the computer. Here, my favorite show. Well, it is right now. And so, let's see. Let's see if I can. Oh, God. This one I'm not. Oh, God, I found it here. Okay. I know. You probably heard it's enough time. But I like this song in particular called Flesh Failures. So I'm going to play it and hopefully Michael will call me.
We starve, look at one another, short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasy, listening for the new total lie.
Love that song. Well, again, I don't know what's going on. I'd love to describe the menu to you. I wanted Michael to describe what it is that I ate. But the topic actually we were going to be talking about is what is known as French service. Not very many people do it, and I don't even know if they do it in France or at every French restaurant. But what it is, in French service, people get served at the table. They all get served at the same time. So the plates go down. So let's say, they in order to do this, obviously, they need more than one wait person to do it. But it's so cool looking. This way, somebody said, "I got mine first." So they'll say, "Oh, wait, I didn't want to eat until everybody else has their stuff." "Okay, come on, you can start. You know how that is. Esther, do you know how that is? Yeah, she's totally aware of that. Because she doesn't, she thinks it's impolite to eat before everybody else is served. I don't care. I don't give a shit. I just eat when the food is in front of me. I mean, what's more important? Let the food get cold or eat it? It's, I don't know nothing happens. It's not like I can click something on and he appears. You know what's going to be, I just realized what could even be worse. No, he already called it. I was going to say, sometimes this thing happens that for some reason it gets blocked and then no one gets the call in. But I guess we're going to find that out in a few minutes when... what's her name? When Barbara, I think it's Yochum, Yochum, and she'll be calling in, and we'll find out. Because if she doesn't call in, then I don't know, something on the with the computer or with the Blog Talk Radio got screwed. We'll know in a little while. I got another commercial. Oh, let me talk. Pittsburgh. Oh, yeah. I got to tell you. last week, only a few days ago. It was only, wait a minute, wasn't that Thursday? Thursday afternoon. That's when I did the last show. And Thursday afternoon, I was trying to do more than just the 15 minutes with Kristen Mitchell from the Pittsburgh CVB. But I had this guy, oh man, it's people. I don't usually have problems on a press trip, but this husband and wife team, and they felt like they were the most important. Well, I don't know how much that she did, but he did. He pushed it. Like they were more important than anybody else. What they were doing was like more important. And they kept talking. They got a deadline and this and that. And we got to one point. Went to a museum. It was the frickin' museum, the frick. Went to the freaking museum, and as we were getting introduced there, we were told no photos. Wow, you had to hear him. After all, he was there to videotape. To videotape. Not with a big camera and a tripod and stuff, And I mean, he was like challenging this guy. Why not? Why not? And the guy says something about liability. And Kevin starts saying, what kind of liability? I mean, he just couldn't get off of it. He couldn't get off that. He couldn't find a way to change this guy's mind so he could do what he wanted to do. It was simple as that. That was their decision on the museum. That was it, you know. And so what did Kevin wind up doing? Like a child. He went, it was like, well, if I can't go in there, well, then if I can't tape it, I'm not going. That's what he was doing. And it goes more and more. He's screwed up my show, taking time from him. But anyway, let's get off of this and let's go to something positive. I believe I have Barbara on the air right now. Barbara?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
So I was at Le Petit Salon. Is that where I was, the name?
Yes, that's where you were.
And your last name is Yoakum, is that it?
That's right, yes.
Oh, good. That's what I said before on the air. I just wanted to make sure I pronounced it correctly. Now, the reason I asked you to come on the air, not just because you have this gorgeous art, and I think it's like your thing, so to speak, is mermaids, huh?
Yeah, mermaids and magic.
Magic, mermaids and magic. But before we get into that, I want to get in. What made you decide? Now, you're not originally from New Orleans, are you?
No, I'm originally from Philadelphia.
Uh-huh. By the way, were you rooting for them versus the Yankees?
Part?
Were you rooting for them?
I'm not really a football fan.
Oh, okay.
That's baseball.
Oh, okay.
See what I know about sports.
Oh.
Sorry.
It's okay. So what made you decide to come to New Orleans anyway?
Oh, I married a man from here. I went to art school with him at the Academy in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
And he was from here.
Mm-hmm.
So my father asked me to please go get a job because I've been in art school for 5 years. And he conveniently asked me to marry him, so I came here.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, and the school also had got me a job teaching at LSU. Or not, yeah. They called it UNO at the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do it. I decided to do portraits and sell my paintings instead because I figured that I wouldn't be good in a college environment. I have sort of a, what do you call it? I'm a little bit of a free spirit.
You want to do your own thing.
Yeah, so I might not do well teaching in a college. But I've never regretted that choice.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, judging from your artwork, I guess people should, when they see it, they'll be glad that you did choose to do this. Now, before we kind of get into that, let's talk a little about New Orleans. Like, how do you see that? You know, were you here during Katrina?
Yeah, I was on my way home from a show when the storm hit. I had done a show in Cape Cod.
Uh huh.
It hit when I was visiting a friend in Maryland on my way home, so I didn't make it home before it hit. So, and I do have a house here. And it was a mess.
So, I mean, you had a house, is it meaning? Or
I still have it. I'm in the Bywater, which is an area in the upper ninth ward, which is the lower ninth is what the area that was really hurt the most,
mm-hmm.
One of the areas. But I'm in the no-flood zone, but what I was told, I wasn't here, but a lot of my neighbors stayed. And when the bowl filled, it didn't stop at the edge of the bowl. It came because the levee broke with so much force that they said it was like a small tsunami, and it went all the way up to the river levee, hit the levee wall, and came back and went back in the bowl. And I'm a corner lot. My house is ground level, and so it pushed water under my doors. And so I had a 14-inch watermark and 4 feet of mold. And all my furniture was covered with mold. It was pretty awful.
Wow.
So, I don't think I'd like to rebuild again. It was pretty horrendous. I lived in a FEMA trailer in my patio for 14 months. Yeah.
Did you?
And I lost my cat. That was the worst part.
Oh, man. I can understand that. I got two kitties.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to lose them.
Hard. My house was actually secondary.
I can understand that. how many years has it been since Katrina?
Since the storm, 4.
Oh, is it? Wow. How many time goes by?
It was August 29th, 4 years.
So, in the 4 years, did you, in terms of like your artwork? Let me first ask you. So in the 4 years, and so now you're like, I mean, I'm here. I'm looking basically just walking around the French Quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody said that this thing hit, it's not apparent to me.
Right.
I mean, I could see what looks to me are houses that have like not done well and are for sale. You know what I'm saying? That's what it looks like to me versus that there's a lot of water damage. I see like
quarter,
what looks.
Well, the quarter wasn't hit hard. The edges of the quarter were hit.
Oh, okay.
Around Canal Street, because a lot of the hotels and buildings on Canal have a basement with generators in them. So they were flooded, Canal Street flooded.
Ah.
And around the edges, because the quarter itself is the highest ground. And so there was very little damage, maybe some wind damage in some houses, I don't really know.
Okay.
But I really don't know anybody that had, except one person who had a house on the edge, who has a condo on the edge on Esplanade. And there was a lot of damage to his building, but it was wind damage.
Yeah.
And, you know, the water came down through the floors and totally ruined the condos, but it all came from wind damage, not flooding.
Well, how do you see like tourism now? I mean, has it gone back to where it was?
It's getting there. I mean, I think mostly what we're feeling now is the kind of slump in the economy. But I started working and selling my paintings again, I think, right after the storm. And there were so many people here, the SBA people, all those insurance adjusters, and everybody wanted to be helpful. And so I painted Katrina babes after the storm. I had very glamorous aunts. They were married to millionaires from New York City, and they were beautiful and glamorous. I'm like a little tiny kid, you know, had long red fingernails, and they wore Lily Dachet hats and glamorous clothes. So I painted these glamorous women, and I call them, you know, they were Katrina babes, standing on roofs holding magic cocktails with stars coming out of them and so forth, wearing boas and all that kind of stuff, waiting to, with this funny looking water, you know, yellow green water,
right,
standing there waiting to be rescued. And then they weren't very realistic, but they made me feel better. And then I call myself a reluctant poet because I write poems around the edges of some of my things.
Yeah.
And I wrote real positive things like "We're on the Mend," "Back to Stay," "Better Than Ever," things like that around the edges. Just, and it made me feel better.
Mhm.
You know, so that's what I did after the storm. I'm kind of over it now. I don't want to dwell on that storm for the rest of my life.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I'm sure.
But I still have giclées of them that I sell and prints and so forth, and I still like looking at them. They were kind of, you know, fun for me.
When did
it was
you
a
get
high
into,
highlight.
When did you get into mermaids?
When I was about 5.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
so it's not a recent
I,
thing that you started painting.
No, I was born. I don't know how to say it. I was born different, I guess. I always was into magic. I used to worry my mother, and I used to beg her to make paper. In those days, they didn't have the wings like they have for kids now. I'd have been in seventh heaven if they'd had them when I was little. But I used to ask her to make me wings out of crepe paper. Do you remember crepe paper?
Oh, yeah.
And
is that stuff still around?
I put her on my website. I'll be at five wearing crepe paper wings. So, you'll have to check my website out and look at it sometime.
Oh, sure. What? And just, we'll talk. May I say it again, but what is your website?
Oh, it's spiritpainter.com.
Spiritpainter.com. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to paint all things magical, you know, but mermaids are my favorite.
What about, what do people like, when people are coming in and looking at your work, do you see them going for more of the mermaids or the other spiritual things?
It depends on the people. I mean, there are people that don't like magic. So they're usually drawn to my New Orleans ladies and my Katrina babes. And I do, sometimes I do women on the beach, just, but they're usually holding a magic cocktail or something.
Uh-huh.
There's always a little bit of magic. And like I have one that's a beach one, and what does it say? It says, oh, heck, I hope I can think of it. Ogre grief, the sky is pink, and stars are streaming from my drink. I guess I'll just enjoy the trip and have myself another sip. And it's a
cool.
It's a painting of a woman, a young woman sitting on the beach holding a magic cocktail, and the sky is pink, and the stars are coming out of the top of the cocktail glass. And they're fun, and that people that aren't really into mermaids and fairies and magical beings really like things like that. So
that's,
I try to have,
yeah.
I like to paint people, but I always add magic to it.
Well,
I like to add a little
nice.
Bit of magic to people's lives. You know, I mean, the world is kind of a difficult place, and I don't want to dwell on the negative or all the, you know, all the mundane, hard things you have to deal with. So I paint magical things, and I hope that there'll be like little healings for people and bring a little magic into their lives.
Oh, yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that, right?
But that's,
not like the... these voodoo shops around.
Yeah.
Which is just interesting, you know. You go in there and I hear them telling you kind of like what potions to have or stuff like that.
It's like flower essences.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it works, yeah.
You know, on Halloween night they had dances and drumming and all kinds of stuff. I'd never seen it before.
Oh, yeah.
And I've lived here for a long, long time, but I've never been to a voodoo ceremony before. But they had one. There's a voodoo shop right up on Dumaine Street near my gallery, and I heard the drumming, and I went around the corner. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the next time I come back to New Orleans, I'll, you know, trying to spend some experience of listening to this. So what do you do when you're not painting? What kind of things that do you enjoy in New Orleans?
I like to go out to dinner with my friends. That's about all I really have time for. I have a family. I have three grandchildren. Two are grown and one is visiting me for the weekend. And my daughter drives a horse and buggy.
Oh, really? How?
Yeah, her name's Maya and she has curly red hair. And she's out there every day.
We'll have to look for her.
Yeah, and she's a very good tour guide. I had friends in town, and I took the tour on her buggy with them. She's really good, actually. And my son works uptown as a tattoo artist in a place. I think it's Dave's his boss, but it's up near Hooters. I don't even remember the name of the tattoo shop. So my daughter paints as well.
Oh, yeah, and what kind of stuff does she do?
She likes to paint dragons.
Dragons. Oh, okay. Well, it's magical, right?
No. The fantasy thing has rubbed off on all my kids. My grandkids. I don't call it fantasy, but they do.
By the way, and your paintings, what are they? I didn't catch, like, what, I don't know what the word is, mode or whatever, because they're not oils. Are they oils? Are they?
But they are oils.
Oh, they are oils. Okay.
Yeah, I do use oil, right.
Oh, okay.
I like oil. Oil is my favorite medium.
Oh, okay. I mean, like, I'm not enough into art to know, like,
no.
You know, to say those kind of things.
No.
I can sort of distinguish, like, I can distinguish, let's say, looking at something and knowing it was done, maybe usually, like, in pastel. I mean, that becomes, it's like, you kind of, you know, you can see the chalky kind of thing.
Yes.
So I know it's
pastel, right?
You know, but then I guess the thing is you're either using oils or watercolor, right?
Or acrylic.
Acrylic.
Yeah.
Oil, right. That's true.
Oil is pigment mixed with linseed oil, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Acrylic is a plastic polymer based medium, so it's basically a plastic paint. And watercolor is just water with pigment. The reason I like oil is when you put it on, I like to use texture and brush strokes. They're important in my work. When you put oil down with your brush or whatever you're using, it doesn't melt. When you use acrylic, it softens. If you have like a brush stroke, instead of it keeping its hard edges that the brush makes, it will kind of soften because it's plastic.
Right.
I don't like that. I prefer, I'm allergic to turpentine, so it's a little bit of a challenge.
Oh,
but
I was going to say, yeah. That's just,
yeah.
Oh, you mean they haven't made turpentine that's green, so to speak?
Not yet. And they do have an odorless turpentine, which is what I use.
Okay.
But it's still, I'll be painting, and I don't sneeze. My nose just starts to run. And so then I just get up and do something else for 10 minutes, and then I go back and I'm okay again for a while.
Yeah, right.
I'm used to having a runny nose, that's all. I paint most all day, every day.
Well, you never know what you could do. I mean, I'm sure some artists will probably let their nose drip onto colors, and it becomes a painting. Look at my work of art, and I'll call it nose drip.
No, I don't let my nose run in my work.
No, that's okay. I just pictured, like, you know, somebody would do that, you know.
The magic. That's really putting yourself into your work.
That's true. That's, yeah.
That's funny.
No,
yeah.
Well, me with art, I don't necessarily appreciate anything that you can, like, look at and say, oh, that's a whatever. You know what
right.
I mean? You know,
yes,
it's like, it looks like people are just some slapping on colors or whatever, and then you make an agreement that that's worthy, and then sell it for a lot of money. But what's the art? What part of the
it
what
has
art
to do
is
with composition? And it's hard to. I mean, there is a lot of abstract art that is. Ick, you know, but there's also some that are really good. I went to the Whitney Museum one day, and they had this huge mother well. It must have been 20 feet long and 10 feet high, and it was just a black shape or dark shape that ran across it, but the composition was so beautiful that I couldn't stop looking at it because this man knew exactly how to put this paint on that really, art's a lot of things. I'm not real good at expressing myself, but composition is important. The shapes need to have interest and not be boring and not, I wish I were better at explaining. And then the negative spaces between and the textures and all these different things.
Right.
How people put that together is whether it's great or not great or mediocre or sort of good. They're a lot of the things that make the difference. I went to the academy for 5 years, and we had classes, but nobody really taught you anything. Like, how you learned was most of the instructors at the academy, this was the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts in Philadelphia. I think it's the only...
Right.
Art school in the country, but the teachers we had were famous painters. Most of them lived in New York. They take the train down one day a week, and they have put a critique sheet up, and if you wanted their criticism, you put your name on the sheet. Then you went in, and they sometimes they tore you to ribbons, that they talked about these different things. And it was sort of you learn by osmosis and listening to it. And each teacher had a different way of showing you these things. So you learned painting from everybody, all these different famous people's viewpoints. And so by osmosis, almost, you learned what painting was about. It was. I didn't realize what I learned until after I was through school.
Hmm.
You know, you put it together a little bit. But that's what makes a painting good or bad. I'm trying to think of somebody. Chagall was, you know, a great master of all that. That's why he was a great painter. And all the greats were like that. One of my favorites is Redon. He's not as well known as a lot of the others. But he was also did a lot of magical things. I like that. But he was a good painter, too.
Now, I also have a question, because I know a lot of artists do that. This, you'll have an oil painting, and then you have, now I forgot what they call it. You know, what Andrew bought today. When we came in.
She bought a fairy.
No, not the subject itself, but the it's not an oil painting. It's
a print.
Yes.
Yeah. A reproduction.
Now,
right.
When you're doing how does that work when you do a print? What do you?
I don't do them myself. I have them printed. I go to a printer who does them on really good paper and has his press is as long as my bedroom. It's huge. My bedroom is 20 feet long. This thing cost $100,000. The ink's so perfect. I actually took one of his prints before I sold them and put it out in my backyard in the sun for 3 days to see if the color was going to fade. And the sun here is intense.
Right.
And it didn't. So, I mean, that's how I test them. But they're done it's all computerized today. You have the picture, either you email, you have a really good camera, and you take this picture and then you email it to your printer, or I have it on a disc,
uh-huh.
And I take him the disc, and then he goes and does his thing on his computer. I'm not very good on computers, but I learn what I have to learn, you know. And then it goes and translates into this press, and the thing starts to whir and click. And before you know it, six prints of it come out,
wow.
And then you sign them and number them. And you sell them. I mean, I'm very clear to people what they're buying, but they're great. And because there's so many people today who can't afford a giclée, a collage, or a painting because they're more expensive. Where the prints are reasonable enough that everybody can enjoy your art.
Well, just as a comparison, and I'm sure one is completely different from another, of course. But let's say, what would a print cost versus what would thinking of one of your paintings.
Okay, well, my paintings start around $550.
Okay, and the
print? For $30 and $45.
Okay.
Now, if I have giclée prints made, then they sell for $75 to $150. Because giclée is another process. It's higher, more technical, and the paper is twice as expensive, and the inks are different again, and the press costs twice as much. And
right.
It does, and a giclée means the squirt in French, and the machine that does the giclées has millions of filaments that are finer than a human hair, and they reproduce the painting exactly like the painting. I have them done on canvas. Those ones in the back room,
right?
They're all giclées. Except the two big mermaids that were back there. And I sign them and number them on the bottom. And they go from $450. I sell them from $450 to $495, where a lot of galleries, they go for $1,000, $2,000. I'm just not well known enough to do that yet. Maybe someday, but not yet. You know. But they're a nice alternative to buying a painting because you don't have to tell people it's a giclée. You know, they won't know it's not an original oil painting if you don't tell them, because that's how close they look.
Yeah, I have something at home that I had gotten done. It's a picture of me with holding a 3-month-old lion cub.
Oh, neat.
And so, the this company, you know, was trying to push it, and I said, well, you know, let me have you do something so I could see what you're talking about, because I had never heard about this before. And it was like done on canvas, and then the canvas is kind of wrapped around
pressure bars. Right?
Well, actually, it's kind of like if you took I think it's wood.
Yeah, that's the stretcher bar, and the canvas is wrapped around it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's wrap. Yeah.
And so it looks like a painting on canvas.
That's a giclée.
Yeah. And
you can do it with a photograph, or you can do it with
an oil. Yeah, that's what I did. I sent him a photograph. But what was really what happened is I said, well, you know, I want to get, and this one wasn't small, but it wasn't like huge. And I said, you know, I want to see. I was asking him to donate one because for an auction, and we wanted to use the Andrea, who was in there. She's the owner of the New York Sharks women's tackle football team.
Okay.
And so we wanted to get one to do that for an auction. And so I got it done. I said, I'm going to send in a team photo and see what it looks like. And we got the team photo. I mean, everybody went crazy looking at how this thing came out. Like, like somebody painted it. And it was it's such a great idea.
It is. It's a giclée means a squirt in French. And I think probably the galleries picked that name because, you know, galleries always like to have things that sound really good. And it is. It's a great name. I'm not good at picking names like that, but I think it's a great name for what they are. And they're very expensive most of the time to have done. But I think they're a really good alternative for people who today, especially now with the economy the way it is, like my paintings go from $550 to $10,000.
Right.
So, and everywhere in between. But the giclées that I have are like $450 and $495, and I think I have one that's $595. And I have actually, on occasion, when I had the original and the giclée, picked up the wrong one to hang, thinking I had the painting, and I realized after I hung it, because it's smooth, you can't feel the brush strokes like you can on the original, that I thought I had the original. That's how close they are. I mean, they do a fabulous job on them today. And I find them, a number of them on the bottom, so it's not obvious unless you want to tell people, and then you can, you know.
Sure.
So it's a good, real good alternative. I'm always looking for things that aren't as expensive for people, so that, you know, especially there's a lot of people that bring their children in to buy their first piece of art,
right,
which I think is the neatest thing. And, of course, they bring them to me because a lot of little kids like fairies and mermaids and things like that, you know, or forest spirits. And they'll either buy a print or a collage. I do collages, too.
The show is going to end in about a minute. So what I just wanted, again, it's www.spiritpainter.com. And Barbara Yoakum, the artist, is at Le Petit Salon. And it's located at 906 Royal Street, New Orleans. And, if you come to anybody coming to New Orleans, check this thing out. Barbara, thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. And thanks for sharing your experience here and of what's going on. And I may get you back again to talk some more.
Thanks a lot.
You just
really
never know. And you'll find out. I'll write about you, too. Okay?
That's great. Stop in again.
Okay. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm sorry I had to cut her off at the end of the show. It'll be a while before I do a show again. I'll be on my cruise and back after the 15th. Don't know what I'm going to do yet. Going to find people on the cruise to talk about. So, good day, good night, everybody. And is there anything, Esther? Is there
anything you want to say. And by the way, Esther doesn't know, but I have a surprise for her. Okay? Yes, Esther. I'm going to have a surprise for you. What do you think about that?